Good morning, everyone. This is Sunday, November 8th, 2015. Our subject is Adam and Fallen Man. Responsive reading, Deuteronomy. Take heed to yourselves, that your heart be not deceived, and ye turn aside and serve other gods and worship them. Who would like to say anything about Golden Text or the responsive reading? Or also, Florence, is there anything you have particular that you would like to bring up?
I was just thinking maybe we can remind ourselves of these other gods, because it's not just, I like the reminder here often about what else is a fault, you know, other gods that we worship. I'm thinking of how I used to wake up just preoccupied with just the claims that have come up, be it, oh, I don't have the right job, or, oh, I don't have enough money to do this. I mean, it's ridiculous really thinking back how preoccupied one can be. And that is really serving the claim and not God at all. So if others have other things to offer, it's just good reminders for us to get on the right track.
That's a great thought. Preoccupation is a false god. When you're preoccupied with something other than God, it's pulling you away. That's the rumination, puts you in the court of mortal mind, and then the trial will begin. I never thought of it quite that way, but think about, what are you preoccupied with? Are you obsessed thinking about, you know, your child or your lack of money, no job, whatever it is you're always thinking about, and not in a constructive way, but in a negative way?
So when you're preoccupied with something, that is worshiping it.
It is.
It's like a form of worry. I think we had in our watches recently where Mary Baker Eddy said, all the time spent in worry would be better spent in faith.
Yes, and in prayer. And, you know, can't you tell sometimes you're with someone and they are preoccupied?
Yeah,
they have it all. They're not listening, right?
Right. They're somewhere else.
And sometimes, you know, those people who are like that, later on, what kind of troubles do they develop?
All kinds.
All kinds, but hearing problems. If you're not listening to the one God, and you're not being awake and alert, but you're preoccupied and always somewhere else, you're shutting out and shutting down. And you have to be careful of that and alert to it. These are the creeping things that come on people. Not so creeping. Well, they go on for long periods of time, and then they result in belief, as we say, into some kind of physical manifestation that you don't need to have. Go ahead, Fearless.
That's why I find it very helpful. I've learned somewhat recently to always, the minute I get up, to say, God is my mind. God is the only mind. And to know that. Because, and not to get involved with the, you know, sort of the things I have to do that day. To let good God's day unfold. I might have an appointment or something like that, but I used to, you know, sort of work on planning everything. And I've let go of that, and it's such a wonderful difference.
Thank you. That is a wonderful difference. And the first thing in the morning, yes, you get to what's the truth about you and the daily duties and then the lesson, because it will pour in like a flood. And if just as Florence said, you wake up in the morning, oh, my gosh, I'm so worried about such and such, and or, you know, what's going to happen, and you just start off the day. They say you start the day off on the wrong foot. Well, you do. You don't have to do that. And you will, Mrs. Eddy says that you are the arbiter of your own fate. What does that mean?
decide whatever you allow to, you know, again, preoccupy your thought,
yes,
what the results would be.
You have a choice as to what you put your trust in, or what you allow to occupy your thoughts.
And what allows your occupies your thought, you will end up experiencing and believe you begin to manifest it. So you, in that way, you should ask yourself, do I want to go where these thoughts are leading me? Because they will lead you. It's a beautiful quote. There's more than that, but she says that we're the arbiter of our own fate, and then she goes on, and, you know, what we think today, we will have tomorrow. And that's why the Lord's Prayer, give us today our daily bread. And what does Jesus say about that?
A prayer that answers every human need.
Yes, that's what Mrs. Eddy says. It's the Lord's Prayer. But in talking about handling the things of the day, it's in that, in the Sermon on the Mount.
Oh, sufficient unto the day.
Yes.
Is the evil thereof?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Right. And take no thought for your life. What ye shall eat or drink or put on. God knows that you have need of all these things. But seek ye first.
Yes.
Kingdom.
What?
The kingdom of God.
Yes.
Yeah. And his righteousness.
And all these things shall be added unto you. So these are such important things to start your day with, knowing and trusting. And yes, you've got enough to deal with today without taking on what's tomorrow going on then. So, and when you do that, and when you're living in the present, thinking about the Father and what he would have you do, as Fairley was saying, not outlining your day, but letting it unfold, it will be a much better day. And you can change the course if you're in this negative, awful course with no money, no job, terrible relationships. Well, how do you change that?
With gratitude for the things you do have.
Good. That's absolutely right. First good step is you're focused on the hole in the donut, which is a sign of the human mind, rather than on the donut.
What else?
I mean, I'm sure a lot of us, I know I've been where I, you know, everything did seem to be absolutely wrong.
Moment by moment.
Pardon me?
God has a good plan for each of his ideas, no matter what the material picture looks like. The reality is, God is a loving God and has a perfect plan, and you just got to lean on God, and that plan will just evolve. It'll come forth. He will guide you every step of the way.
And Suzanne knows, because she came out of a living hell.
Yeah, been there, done that. I learned my lesson the hard way.
And the operative statement there is to lean on God. What does that mean?
Trust in him, rely on him, ask him for guidance and stay there, no matter what seems to be going on. For me, it's a moment-by-moment thing, because if I get caught up in the big picture, oh, I don't have a job, or oh, this is not working, then it just takes me completely off of whatever God is telling me or showing me in that moment that's probably leading to a better situation. So,
absolutely. Say that again, baby.
It's moment-by-moment, really asking God, trusting what he's doing in that moment, rather than focusing on the big picture of what seems to be wrong. Because when I take my thought off of God and do focus on those things, I'm completely missing what he's telling me to do, you know, or to think in that moment that's leading me to a better situation.
Yes.
Very good.
He's always knocking on your door, and this is the power of your thought. So if you are all obsessed and focused on all this era, and you have no job, and you have your relationships are terrible, and you're not feeling well, and you think more and more of that, you will have more and more of that. Okay?
It's exactly. It's true. I mean, looking back, it's just how ridiculous it is. But it's a mesmerism, you know, I want this situation healed. Why is this not healed? And in fact, even when you're talking to a practitioner, because your thought is so much on getting that particular healing, exactly, you don't even hear or you don't practice what's being said.
Right. You don't even hear what she's telling you. You're so obsessed, again, thinking about the problem. You're not hearing the moment. And also, it's because you're not listening in the moment. You're not obeying. You're disobedient. You're on the wrong path. And you won't change that path until you stop it. But it always starts with your thinking. And sometimes it takes a mighty effort. I see it like a great big tank or something just barging down the road, and suddenly you got to turn that tank around and get it going in the right direction. Sometimes that's hard, but you have to start somewhere, and you better start the sooner the better, or it's only going to get worse in your belief. And what are we, all of this stuff we're talking about, not feeling well, not having a job, no, not good relationships, how does it relate to the lesson? That's a big hint for you.
The Adam Dream.
Right. It's all part of the deception, which is why the golden text says, be not deceived.
And I think that's why this kind of reminds me of a story of a couple of sisters at the turn of the century. Their mother was very ill. She was in the bedroom, and the sisters were very worried and very stressed. And the idea came to them, you need to rejoice. Break the mesmerism by rejoicing. And the idea was, oh, it's time to play the piano. So they played the piano, they sang hymns, they were rejoicing. Maybe an hour, half an hour, I'm not sure how long, the mother walked out of the bedroom. So it's very important as well, to keep rejoicing. I mean, it's hard to think that way sometimes, but it helps to break the mesmerism to rejoice.
Absolutely.
That's how you keep from being deceived, isn't it?
That's why the singing of our hymns and all of that, it's wonderful. Uplift thought, even just saying the hymn. But and how did Peter, no, it was Paul and Silas, how did they get out of the prison?
Hymns.
Yeah, they were singing. Now, if anyone had a reason to be miserable, they did. They were only doing good. I mean, they hadn't even done anything wrong. They'd only been doing good and healing people. And they were thrown into this prison, but they refused. They could have whined and, you know, oh my gosh, this is just the end. I'm going to give up. But they sang hymns and praised God. And what happened?
Chains broke off.
Yes. And they their stories, and this, I was talking recently to this Bob in California, but all these stories of people who have been witnesses of Christians who are under persecution seem to be having a really bad time, and yet they are praising God, singing, and what a strong testimony, and that many get converted in watching and seeing and witnessing that, or how they don't hate when they're being beaten up or whatever else. Tremendous witness. One thing that has helped me is remember God always took care of me, no matter what my problem was, and to know He always will. And I just have to go to Him, trust, listen, and obey. Thank you. that, yes, to go back and count your blessings, as I guess it was Suzanne in the beginning said, to be grateful. Hitherto the Lord hath helped us, and hitherto he will. Because when you're in that state, you think nothing's ever gone right. God has never helped you. You don't even know God, or God helps other people, but he doesn't help you. And it just goes on and on when you're in that state. That's why you've got to break it. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and you're also really saying that evil is real and good is not.
Most definitely you are, and this goes back to belief in other gods, and it's certainly in the lesson about, and we had it in the watch recently, what was it, Carol, about the serpent? We can thank God that there is no such thing as that.
As a talking serpent.
The talking.
Oh, right, the talking serpent.
Yeah. And we should rejoice that evil, by whatever figure presented, contradicts itself and has neither origin nor support in truth and good. Seeing this, we should have faith to fight all claims of evil, because we know that they are worthless and unreal. You always go back to that. So whatever it's telling you, and I don't care how many people are dreaming the dream, no jobs out there, none for me, none for you, none for no one. you can't go with that. Did God tell you that? Did God say, listen, you, there are no jobs out there, don't even bother.
Yeah, because what's the implication of that? No jobs? What does that mean? It means I'm worthless, that I can't serve mankind in some way. That I can't serve God in some way and get properly compensated for it. Come on. That's ridiculous. What a deception.
Indeed.
Don't buy it.
And it will separate those who do get jobs from those who don't. Yeah. What were you going to say, someone?
No, I was going to say, it's really saying, well, God created us all and left us here to suffer.
Yes.
Right.
Thanks,
and there are a lot of people who I had a teacher in high school, I remember. I was having a discussion with him, and that's exactly what he believed, firmly believed, that God sort of created us and then sort of went off to do his own thing somewhere else, left us here to kind of figure things out. You know, a lot of people believe that. Why it's important that we be not deceived by those things.
Yeah, or just, you know, Gary could have, if he hadn't had some science background, he could have believed his teacher and thought, oh, wow, that makes sense. It's probably true. Look at all the stuff going on in the world. He's right. But Gary knew better, and so must we. And that is why we know this truth is the truth for everyone everywhere, to break this mesmerism. That's all it is, and I don't care how big it seems to be or how small. So also in that was citation 4 I read from, but it goes on, Adam, the synonym for error, interesting, it's another name for error, Adam, stands for a belief of material mind. He begins his reign over man somewhat mildly, but he increases in falsehood, and his days become shorter. In this development, the immortal spiritual law of truth is made manifest as forever opposed to mortal material sense. Okay. He begins his reign over man somewhat mildly. What does that mean?
Subtly. I mean, it's sort of deceptive.
It could be just a random thought, and then we let it take root.
Yeah. Thank you. That's right. Just a random thought that you let take root. Like, you're tired, not feeling that great. Or, yeah, it's hardly worth trying to look for a job because there aren't any. That's what the news told me tonight. Or why bother on this one little thing and all this air is going on? What difference can I make? And it will be random. I like that. Random. What does random mean?
Come from nowhere. Just
yeah, right. Where did that come from?
We know what nowhere is.
Yeah. Just seems to come out. Sometimes it'll just seem to come out of the blue. And mildly, so yeah, it'll get you mildly. Oh, it doesn't seem so bad, right?
Right, yes. And it may not seem to be coming to you directly either, as far as thinking of random. It might just some thought that you hear something somewhere, but it doesn't seem to be talking directly to you, and then before you know it,
it's taken root.
It is, yes.
Who else? Linda, was that you?
No. That just reminds me of the bland denial that we talked about. Mildly and bland, it just seems, not so bad, but it leads to much worse.
Yeah.
I always think of little babies born into the world, so pure, so holy and good, and just so gradually but quickly, the parent thought comes in with, oh, you're going to hurt yourself. Oh, wash your hands. There's terrible germs out there, and you can catch sickness and so forth. And so it begins, and it grows and grows.
Yes.
Yep.
Why the, bringing your children up in the correct way is so important, not to foster the fears of mortal belief, mortal mind.
I like the word random because it's like that impersonal aspect to it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is impersonal. It's always impersonal. You're the one that personalizes it by making it yours. You want to break? Yeah, good point.
Is that guest again? I can't shake that thought off. It's so great to me.
I know.
Here it comes. Come in.
Come in. And what type of thinking lets it come in?
Oh, this morning I keep thinking about that thing that we used to say when we, something silly when we were kids. It was, nobody likes me, everybody hates me, I think I'll eat a worm. And
I don't think that one made it to the East Coast.
Remember?
I can remember that from California.
Right there was another California.
Oh, it must be a California thing.
Well, this randomness, I mean, we can't be responsible for the thoughts that come to us, but we are responsible for what we do with them. And sometimes, what we do about thoughts depends upon where they come from. They come from a spouse or a boss or someone that we have kind of a strong personal feeling, personal sense of, versus coming from a stranger. And it, as Mary said, we either personalize it, make it ours, or we impersonalize it and do something about it.
Yeah, so...
I think something that you were told when you were a child, I hear that often, some negative thing that you probably were told when you were a child.
Right,
yeah, those are the hard ones to shake sometimes,
right.
Because...
Don't go out in the cold without wearing a coat, because you will catch a cold.
Yeah, and you have your mother tell you that repeatedly, or someone you respect what they say, or you think you should. That's why in science you learn to judge righteous judgment. If it's not a thought from God, I don't care who says it. It doesn't matter who says it. It's always one era saying it if it's not of God. I don't know who doesn't matter who voices it. And that's the impersonal nature of Christian Science in the true sense of it. They're voicing error, and I don't care who it is. Or they're voicing the truth, and I don't care who that is. Can be, you know, anybody can be voicing the truth to you. Are you listening? Do you recognize it as truth?
Because it will come through a very humble heart, someone who might just be a child, or someone who might not have a very big position in a company, or in the church, or who might not dress very well.
If your spiritual sense is operating, you will recognize it and not reject it.
And but, not be deceived.
Yes, not be deceived. So, but what makes you susceptible to these thoughts, well, I'll start one, is, not, of course, not being alert. Not alert, so you just accept it. Don't deny it. You take it in. What would be another?
I think also not claiming the mind that is yours, with the real mind, your real mind, which fairly referred to, I found that very helpful in every morning, really reminding myself what my mind, the real mind, that's mine.
Yes, and you know, Mrs. Eddy did that every day, first thing in the morning. That's why we've been taught to do it. She said, my mind is the divine mind. And something like, and all my moments are his. I think Bill told me that statement, but anyway, we were taught here to know that God is mind, God is my mind, God is the only pure and perfect mind. You start it with that. And she also says in prose works that it cannot drift into evil. You know that God is your mind. It's exempt from those erroneous suggestions. And also to know it is the only mind. There is no other mind. And the other is one that Suzanne said about being grateful. You're really grateful for God and for all the good that you have. That keeps a barrier, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Devil can't whisper discontented things to you when you're grateful.
That's one way of preoccupying your thought with God.
Yes.
Instead of some other nonsense or garbage.
Yes.
It certainly makes any other thought stand out. Those for me.
It does. Yes,
yeah.
It does. So guard your citadel, and of course, in Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy says that those thoughts cannot go forth like wandering pollen. If what?
Virtue and truth build a strong defense.
Okay.
What is virtue?
Godlike qualities. Patience.
Right.
Kindness.
Yep.
Forgiveness.
Yes. Expressing the Christ. Sermon on the Mount, the Ten Commandments, living the commandments.
A pure motive.
Pure motive. The gratitude we were talking about, the alertness. The virtue, and then truth would be, again, you can only be deceived if you don't know the truth. You don't know better.
And whatever you know of Christian Science, whatever you know to be true, even the simplest, tiniest fact of truth, is a huge, strong defense.
What's so great about it? Is
yeah. You don't have to know all of the truth. In fact, I would dare say none of us does.
No. Start with what you know and build up on that. Go ahead.
I just wanted to share the definition of heed because it's really a very active word. It says I got this from the King James Dictionary, to mind, to regard with care, to take notice, to attend, to observe, and to be earnest instead, look steady, very active.
Yeah, good. To take heed.
Kind of like Stan Porter at the door of thought, isn't it?
Now, last week I ended, it was on Watchers, Prayers, and Arguments, page 176, Mrs. Eddy's definition of animal magnetism, which I just read, Adam, the synonym for error, stands for a belief of material mind. And it started with Eve wanting to know about error, taking that fruit from that tree, even though God had told her not to. So that definition is, animal magnetism is starting a belief and getting others to fear it. So, can anyone give me an example of that?
Someone told my husband just the other day that when they were out, he passed them in walking, and he spoke about this certain movie, a really good movie that he wanted to see, but he didn't go to see it because it was flu season, so he was going to wait and Netflix the movie.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, and there, so you see, that's like this random thing just coming to you that you've got to slam dunk and get rid of. But certainly, and that is one, that it's flu season, and then, or, you know, there are many others, including, you know, even this idea that people reject the truth. ISIS, I mean, all of that they start is just beliefs that there's a power and presence apart from God. It all starts with that. But then, until evil is done, others fear it, and then evil is done. So, oh gosh, I'm so scared. Look what's happening. Oh dear. And then the evil is done. All the mortal minds are gazing at the evil. Says evil is done to those that hold the belief. Okay, so you have to hold the belief first. You don't hold the belief.
I think food is. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I think food has become a big one of those. Like gluten is bad. You can't.
Right.
That just seemed to come from nowhere, and yeah. Now it's everywhere.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I know. Yes. If you have any problem, you've had gluten.
I still don't know.
I know. I'm sorry.
I don't know exactly what it is.
I know. I read this, you know, article about if someone protesting this and saying, you know, that gluten is the bread of life. People have been eating bread, is what people have been eating for centuries. Now it's suddenly this awful thing that no one can eat. And, we have to, I kid about it, because I've been more recently making my own bread, and some of the recipes call for extra gluten. Gluten is what makes bread, and I just love it. And tasty. So I would go to the store and say, I need a box of gluten. And they looked at me like I was crazy. Finally, there was this little, you know, old-fashioned whole food store that carried bags of gluten.
They must not know what's happening now.
Well, that's how mass mesmerism works.
That was a great example and a good current example, Dede, because that is so true. The gluten, oh. You have gluten. Watch your thinking, not your gluten. Okay, so yeah, that's okay. Oh my gosh, I had gluten and gluten made me sick, and now, you know, you better be careful. You're related to me, and you're going to be allergic to gluten too. And so the evil is done to those that hold the belief, and then the law is made. The law is made. Yeah. Everybody, watch out for gluten. And then it says the serpent grows into what?
The dragon.
The dragon.
Right. The little lie has become a law.
And how good we can look at it and laugh at it and see it for what it is. Because if you can do that, then it can't trap you. It can't deceive you. That's happened over the years. She can't eat tuna fish. She can't eat eggs. And
right.
Tuna fish.
Eggs.
Sounds like the thing about organic. I mean, it, organic just costs more.
That's all.
Just kidding, out.
Where did that come from? What?
Peanut allergy.
Oh, peanut. Yeah, peanut. Here we've been, children have been eating peanut butter sandwiches forever.
I've had a peanut butter sandwich every day of my life since I was 2 years old.
And loving it. That's
your problem.
I was just telling my kids yesterday, when I was young, I didn't know anybody with any allergies. And then my son was saying how there's always an ambulance waiting at the football field.
Oh.
And they always have to take somebody away. And I said, I never remembered anybody getting hurt either.
That's the claim, the ambulance.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So a law has been made, and so it's expected. When it is generally expected, it's likely to happen.
Yeah, and then you get parents, oh my gosh, I'm really worried, you know, what if my child eats a peanut and some awful thing happens and all that fear gets conjured up? So, but you're right, it changes from, you know, year to year according to the medical beliefs of it. It used to be cranberries were terrible. Well, as I was a child, my brothers called them cancer berries. And now,
you find them everywhere because they've got a bunch of omega 3s or 4s or 5s or whatever.
And make sure you eat cranberries.
They happen to be good with turkey.
They do. And as we laugh at this, we certainly are not laughing at the suffering of mankind, may be sure of that, but we are laughing at the absurdity of mortal mind, and that is very important and essential to laugh. Because Mrs. Eddy says, in order to break a mesmerism, what three things to break a mesmerism? First one is laughter.
Crying.
Laughter.
Anger. Or making them upset, I guess. I don't know.
Making them mad.
Right.
You do that, then they're jarred from this change of base, from a change of base of a belief of the human existence, the Adam dream, to, you know, it's a shock, sort of, to laugh, cry, or get angry. And if you don't do that, then they're just, you know, when a person is in a mesmerized state, what are they like?
Zombie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A zombie.
You can't reach them.
No, you can't. You can't.
They're walking around, but they're not alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why if you can get them to laugh at the situation, cry, break down and cry, or get angry, even start a fight to break the mesmerism with someone. That's health-giving. So, all of this relates to the Adam dream, which is why we're discussing it.
I have a question on the whole food situation. Where does one draw the line between eat what is set before you and adulteration? Because listening to conversation, I think a lot of times, you know, this one's terrible or that one's terrible. From having been a farmer, I think it's a cover for way back, there weren't as many quote-unquote poisons being used in the production of and produce their preservation of food. Food spoiled in, you know, a couple of days if you didn't eat it or refrigerate it, or even if it was refrigerated. Now you can have certain things. I had some breadcrumbs that were in the freezer for ages, and then I put them in the cupboard for ages, and they never changed in the cupboard.
I know, I find that really scary.
Right, exactly. And so then it comes back to Jesus talking about the wheat and the tares. He didn't say eat the tares and demonstrate over them. He said separate the tares. So I was just kind of curious what to...
Yeah, I don't think that parable applies to this situation. But he did say something about food.
Mm-hmm. He
no
anybody.
Thought.
Yeah,
yes.
And he also said something else.
Not what goes in your mouth, but what's in your heart.
Yeah, it's not what goes into your mouth that defileth a man. In other words, don't worry about it. Don't be stupid about it, but don't worry about it. Because if you're someplace where God wants you to be, and someone has set food before you to eat, out of love, you can eat it.
Without harm to yourself?
Without harm to yourself, exactly.
I honestly, when I think of it, I was raised on Wonder Bread, Hostess cupcakes, and Kool-Aid. And I don't know how I made it through. Now, today, honestly, I do feel, I think about, you know, what Jesus ate or what Mrs. Eddy ate, and it was pure good, not all was poison in it. And so, as much as possible, I think you should eat that way. The fresh, natural, good food that's not full of all this stuff. But if you can't for some reason, or you can't afford it, or you can't just don't want to do it, whatever you feel is right for you, I think you will do just fine. I mean, I certainly, when I think of all the stuff I ate that's supposed to be, you're not supposed to eat it now, and I ate it, that was all I did eat. All this processed stuff, that's what we ate. And now it's supposed to be not good for you, but it didn't seem to harm me at all.
Go back to the thought behind it.
It is.
The belief.
No one feared it then. No one made this belief of how awful it is. Now that belief is made. Therefore, those beliefs need to be handled, some of these things. That's why you don't do, like you could say, well, wine doesn't affect you, so I'll just drink a bottle of wine. Well, you're going to have to handle the belief that it does affect you. And not only that, but there are thousands of people who hold that belief. So this is where Christian Scientists can be very stupid. Don't be stupid. And if you want to just go around and constantly handling these beliefs, it's much easier just not to drink the wine. So, that being said, everyone is free to ask God what's best for them.
And don't be preoccupied.
Don't be preoccupied, because some are. All they do, and I know people, all they do, they're on the internet, they're checking out all the foods, every magazine, reading all about the foods, what food to eat, what not to eat. Then you're really getting off kilter.
There's nothing more annoying than when you have a restaurant with someone who asks a million questions about all the menu, on the menu, looking for the food that's just absolutely perfect and without possibly go wrong.
I know. Or you're trying to prepare dinner and you've got a vegan and a vegetarian and a family and a
glass of water.
Everybody gets a glass of water because that's all you can serve.
But it'll be purified.
Purified water, yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, so as we laugh at it, we do not take it to extremes. Do the best you can with what you have, and I think to eat simply is good. And I also think, I mean, I don't eat a lot of meat. I don't care to. But everyone is different, and I wouldn't tell anyone else what to do, except, well, this is how I feel. And God will tell you what's right and what's good. And He will tell you. He'll lead you. And it's a blessing from Him, God's blessing. And Mrs. Eddy said she could never have a meal without saying grace, or her evening meal. She always said grace. She was raised to say grace. And I think that's a lovely thing to do, to thank God for what's presented before you. Thank God for the goodness of the day. Keep your thought uplifted. And it's a good thing to teach your family. So.
Am I in?
Oh, go ahead, Gina.
Another word that seems to be popping up everywhere, epidemic.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Mm-hmm. And that has the same connotation as any disease, and it's, you know, everybody takes it up and believes it and has to go get a shot or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that says it all, because in thinking about the whole food thing and the epidemic thing as somebody trying to sell us something to make money. You know, so they want to make money on flu shots and they want to make money on preservatives, and it's a lot easier to produce food without people by using chemicals, because the food that's produced without chemicals takes a lot more people to do it, and then you have to pay those people. If you want to be fair, you have to pay them well, and that cuts into the profit margin. So it's maybe another way of...
Well, that's also a very good point. Behind all this is often money-making, and we've talked about it on television. It used to be there'd be ads for Ipana toothpaste. Now it's ad after ad after ad of these prescription drugs, one after the next. It's unbelievable. Thank God we can fast-forward or mute. But they're selling it all, and someone's making a profit. So with that, we thank God, and we're going to turn to miscellaneous writings for one. I guess we have time for one question and answer. On page 39, and this relates to all that we've been talking about, was the question, can you take care of yourself? Who would like to read it?
I'll read it. Question is, can you take care of yourself? God giveth to everyone this puissance, and I have faith in his promise, quote, lo, I am with you alway, end quote, all the way. Unlike the MDs, Christian scientists are not afraid to take their own medicine, for this medicine is divine mind, and from this saving, exhaustless source, they intend to fill the human mind with enough of the leaven of truth to leaven the whole lump. There may be exceptional cases where one Christian scientist who has more to meet than others needs support at times. Then it is right to bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ.
Now, this was aimed at her because, you know, oh, she's the old invalid, that's how they saw her. And she just turned it all around and said, yes, of course she could. And so can everyone else who names the name of science. Of course you can. And it goes back to the lesson where when the science of being is universally understood, every man will be his own physician. And truth will be the universal panacea. So you must never think that you can't take care of yourself, that you don't have the answers from God, that you don't know what to eat or what job you should get or anything else, because you can. God is with you. The Christ is with you. I'm with you forever. I love it. I love it. I thought, oh, it's just a simple little question we can skip again. But no, it has great meaning. And you never have to fear of becoming helpless or an invalid or anything else. She's addressing that. How dare you say that about her? How dare you say it about any working scientist? Of course you can take care of yourself. You're leaning on the Christ truth. And you have all that you need. And God is your physician and your mind. All the things we talked about today. We are not in the Adam dream. We are the image and likeness of God. We are that first creation. As long as we stay humble, we will keep in that right mind, and we won't take a stumble that puts us back into that dream. We can easily wake ourselves up or have a good friend that punches you in the nose and wakes you up with either laughing, crying, or getting you angry. Okay, I'm going to end now. Miscellaneous writing, 280 to 281. It's Mrs. Eddy's, the March primary class, and she's talking to the class. She says, on the morning of the 5th, I met the class to answer some questions before their dismissal and allude briefly to a topic of great import to the student of Christian science. The rocks and sirens in their course, on and by which so many wrecks are made. The doors of animal magnetism open wide for the entrance of error. Sometimes just at the moment when you are ready to enter on the fruition of your labors, and with laudable ambition are about to chant hymns of victory for triumph. The doors that this animal element flings open are those of rivalry, jealousy, envy, revenge. It is the self-asserting mortal willpower that you must guard against. But I find also another mental condition of yours that fills me with joy. I learned long ago that the world could neither deprive me of something nor give me anything, and I have now but one ambition and one joy. But if one cherishes ambition unwisely, one will be chastened for it. Admiral Coligny, in the time of the French Huguenots, was converted to Protestantism through a stray copy of the scriptures that fell into his hands. He replied to his wife, who urged him to come out and confess his faith, "It is wise to count the cost of becoming a true Christian." She answered him, "It is wiser to count the cost of not becoming a true Christian." So whatever we meet that is hard in the Christian warfare, we must count as nothing and must think instead of our poverty and helplessness without this understanding, and count ourselves always as debtors to Christ's truth. That is how you keep yourself out of the Adam dream.
Amen. So,
thank you. We'll go forth and have a wonderful, powerful service. Thank you all for all your active contribution yesterday and today and all week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.